Welcome to North Shore News and Interviews on Amherst Island Radio. Each week, we keep you updated on newsworthy events, happenings, and conversations that we've had with people in the local community and beyond.
It was a close 4-3 vote in favor of a proposed ward boundary update at Loyalist Township's latest council meeting. The three opposing members voiced concerns about fair representation and extreme population disparity. At a special committee of the whole meeting last month, it was a 4-3 vote as well. After much discussion, option one was chosen and brought to council. This option will see the division of the existing three wards into five new wards. The new configuration includes Amherst Island as its own ward, although its population is only around 450 people. Councillor Jake Ennis made note of this while speaking about population disparity.
It's well established that a variance of up to 25% can be appropriate for good reason, perhaps up to 33% in some municipal OLT decisions. Here it's 500% plus. If this bylaw stands, I think it would set a problematic precedent. If 919 people in one ward versus over 5,000 people in other wards is okay, when does the disparity ever become not okay?
Ennis spoke about different views towards each option.
In my view, those supportive of this motion are okay with mixing rural mainlanders and urban mainlanders in one ward, but are not okay with mixing islanders and mainlanders in one ward. Why? I'm not sure. My view is that those supportive of this option erred in their focus on this community versus that community, where instead the main focus, in my view, should have been on each person in Loyalist and each person's charter right to relative equality of voting power and effective representation.
While reviewing options, staff noted they were looking to evaluate the current electoral arrangements, including how council representatives are elected, existing ward boundaries, and overall council composition. Staff's original report noted a key objective was to support anticipated growth over the next three municipal election cycles. More information and an interactive map are available on the township's website. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Loyalist Township is proclaiming June as Stroke and Aphasia Awareness Month. The Greater Kingston Victorian Order of Nurses approached Township Council with a proclamation request. The organization offers community support programs for seniors and persons with disabilities. Their stroke services programs offer free non-medical support to individuals and families affected by stroke and aphasia. There are monthly groups held in Sydenham, Kingston, and Napanee. Social worker and coordinator of stroke services with the Greater Kingston Victorian Order of Nurses, Amelia Leslie, notes the importance of awareness, highlighting statistics in Canada.
We have over 108,000 new strokes in Canada annually, with over 800,000 Canadians living with the effects of stroke, and stroke does happen every 5 minutes in Canada.
The organization encourages community members to recognize the warning signs of a stroke and to immediately call 911. They're also encouraging people to learn about aphasia and how to promote accessible communication. Leslie explains the medical conditions.
Stroke being a neurological condition affecting the disruption of blood flow in the brain. And because the brains are control center of everything, anything can be affected. When we talk about aphasia, it's a language and communication disorder affecting our ability to read or write or produce speech or understand speech, but not affecting our intelligence.
Leslie mentions the need for communication accessibility and the awareness of it as well.
We're often teaching the community about what's called accessible communication strategies. We think about accessibility as far as physical space, maybe having a ramp or an automatic door button, but we are also teaching folks about the communication accessibility.
Leslie notes the importance of Stroke and Aphasia Awareness Month in all communities.
We work all year to raise awareness about these neurological conditions. And June is Stroke and Aphasia Awareness Month in Canada. So we're especially inviting our communities to learn what stroke and aphasia are and how to help.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Loyalist Township Council recognized the work of volunteers who ran local outdoor rinks this winter. 9 individuals were given certificates for their efforts in setting up and maintaining the rinks. Under the township's Community Outdoor Rinks program, 3 rinks operated for a total of 53 days this past season. There was the rink at Skater Park in Odessa, a rink in front of Bath Public School, and a rink in Amherstview. Mayor Jim Hagedorn noted the weather conditions and the work of volunteers.
This was our second year with the Community Outdoor Rink program and our first year with weather that cooperated to allow for 3 skatable outdoor rinks in our community. Thanks to the hard work and dedication of our volunteers, the rinks were open for an incredible 53 days and were enjoyed frequently. That means 53 days of hard work for everybody that volunteered. That's pretty amazing.
Hagedorn spoke about the local impact of the rinks.
These teams of dedicated volunteers built and maintained ice daily, giving residents of all ages a safe and fun place to skate, play hockey, and enjoy the outdoors. Their efforts created more than just rinks. They built spaces for connection, activity, and community spirit during the coldest months of the year.
Hagedorn thanked the volunteers directly.
I'd like to extend our sincere thanks to the volunteers behind the past winter's community outdoor rink season. On behalf of council, thank you for your time and commitment. Thank you again for making this winter one to remember.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. A new water pollution control plant upgrade and replacement project in Napanee is underway. Greater Napanee Council approved a contract with Peak Construction for nearly $75.5 million. The overall project cost is nearly $88 million, with $34.8 million in funding coming from the province and another $14 million from the federal government. Between that funding and the town's reserves, it leaves $25 million to be funded through loans. Staff noted a total of $5.5 million in contingencies, with $4 million of it built into tender pricing as an allowance for tariffs. Mayor Terry Richardson spoke about the scale of the project.
I know folks out there are going to say, oh, is $25 million affordable? But an affordable way of getting this municipality into the future. I've said it many times that, this is the largest purchase, largest investment we've made in this municipality in 170 years. And there are a lot of other municipalities I think would be wishing they were in the position that we are right now.
Richardson noted the importance of the funding they received.
Yes, $25 million is a lot of money to take a loan out on, but it is our future. We couldn't do it without the help of our partners, of our federal partners, and maybe more importantly, our provincial partners, who I couldn't imagine having this conversation if we didn't have the funding that we received to get us where we need to, because if $25 million scares you, $60 million should scare the bejumpins out of you.
General Manager of Growth and Infrastructure and Chief Building Official Michael Nobes explained why the project is needed.
We need this for the anticipated growth of the community. So we are anticipating a significant amount of both residential, commercial, and industrial growth within the urban settlement area, as well as modest growth within the rural area. So we are anticipating additional rural growth that would have the need for sewage disposal through septic tank disposal. So that is being planned for in the design and throughout the construction of the project.
Richardson noted how important the future of the town is, referencing all the work done in the past.
There can't be a Band-Aid left in this country because they put them all on this wastewater treatment plan to get us to where we are today. And there just isn't any left. It's worn out. It needs to be replaced. And again, it is our future. This is the future of our municipality right here. And I know it sounds really kind of strange and weird that we should be excited about a wastewater treatment plant, but we really should, because it's going to give us the future that we deserve in this municipality.
Nobes detailed the timeline for completion.
Through 2027, we would see the project continue, and midway through 2027 or towards the end of 2027 is when the commissioning of the plant would be undertaken, and through 2027, 2028 and onward, bringing the new facility up to full operation is the anticipated timeline.
Nobes spoke about the overall goals of the project and the expected location.
replace aging infrastructure with new enhanced treatment to dramatically reduce partially treated wastewater during bypass events as a result of heavy flows entering the plant, and to provide further growth opportunities for the community through new development. The new plant would be located immediately west of the existing site and consists of new headworks, new activated granular sludge tanks, tertiary treatment UV disinfection, and an operations and control building. Ultimately, we're looking to increase the hydraulic capacity of the plant, eliminate bypassing during peak wet weather events, and to comply with the Bay Oquinnie Remedial Action Plan to reduce, provide for a better effluent leaving the plant.
Staff will also be working on modernizing processes to simplify operations, improve energy efficiency, and decrease life cycle costs. The report noted the existing plant location will become available for future expansion projects when required. Nobes detailed the type of growth the new plant could support.
This new plant would provide for the capacity up to an anticipated an approximate 4,000 new homes, in addition to a mix of commercial and industrial growth. And as we see this new development proceed, the assessment growth of the municipality will ultimately grow, which helps to provide additional operating and capital revenues for the municipality for future planning. We have nearly 1,600 dwelling units approved that are either in the construction stage or are considered shovel ready. So draft plan approved, site plan approved, final plan of subdivision approved. And these units were highlighted in our funding application to the province, which helped get us the amount of funding that we ultimately did from the province. Of the 1,600 units that are approved per se, we would be looking at 16 years of build out for those.
Only pre-qualified general contractors were able to view the tender and submit a bid. For a compliant submission, the report stated all pre-qualified general contractors had to partner with pre-qualified electrical and mechanical contractors. Director of Environmental Services Christy Kelly explained the bids they received and noted who Peak Construction will be working with.
4 out of 5 of the GCs submitted bids, and all 4 were compliant. In addition to the general contractor work, Peak will utilize internal resources for the mechanical work and will be working with Sheridan Electric as their electrical contractor.
Kelly spoke about contingencies built in and noted U.S. tariffs as a main cause.
There's $4 million here that is set aside for tariffs. We all know there's some uncertainties with the way things are right now, and a lot of that pre-selected equipment is being purchased from this, the United States, so we've allowed that contingency allowance in there for such a thing.
Nobes explained staff's intentions with the contingencies.
The intent is not to use these contingencies at all, but we did want to set out a plan for council's awareness and for the community that really was as conservative as possible to take into account potential unknowns at this point.
Kelly explains why they couldn't choose Canadian options or options from other countries besides the United States.
The pre-selected equipment, including the AGS tanks specifically and or the activated granular sludge process is a United States-based process. So that was purchased, again, before the talks of these tariffs. We had to pre-select these pieces of equipment. We've certainly are working to do our best to ensure that, as I'm sure much of our country is, to purchase locally as much as possible, but a lot of these items were unfortunately only available from the United States.
Nobe speaks about the expected lifetime for the new plant, touching on upgrades in the distant future, and mentioning the history of the current plant as well.
The existing plant, it was built in 1953. It's still in operation today. The actual use of it, 50 plus years, is anticipated. Routine maintenance will always be required. But we would be talking a 50 plus year design of the building. When the capacity of the plant is reached, per se, ultimately would depend on the rate at which the municipality builds out over time. So it would ultimately depend on how quickly the building permits are being pulled and homes are ultimately being built. If it's, I'd say it's worth looking back over the last few years, we're looking at in the range of 100-ish units per year, ballpark.
Nobes talks about the potential of future upgrades.
It is very straightforward to add additional cells. Adding additional cells onto the site is not going to be a challenge. It would be a matter of doing additions to the existing footprint. So it's not like we would be looking at all a brand, you know, brand new $80 million project again in the future, it would be a much more modest amount to add additional capacity, more or less additions onto those portions of the structure, as a lot of the headworks, the UV treatment and other buildings on the site would be able to function with these additions onto those cells.
Nobes speaks about the $34.8 million they received from the provincial government and explains the $14 million they got in 2020 from the federal government.
That was through the Canada Infrastructure Program for Ontario's allocation to the rural and northern communities infrastructure stream. We were successful with working with our local MP on getting our name pulled up the list to get that funding. And last year we were successful in receiving provincial funding, just under $35 million. And with that, it is certainly making the project feasible. Without these contributions, we would not be in a financial state to be able to undertake this significant infrastructure project fully on our own.
Nobes highlighted staff's appearances at Roma conferences as a reason they received the funding.
I recall being with council at Roma delegations and discussions with ministers prior to submitting those applications. And I think those really helped to bring our application up in the queue in the eyes of the province. And I think it really helped get us to this point and have a good outcome with those funding applications.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Napanee's Arts Advisory Committee is taking over Music by the River, a live music series in Napanee. The committee noted they'll be scaling back to just two performances throughout 2025. Councillor and member of the Arts Advisory Committee, Bob Norrie, explained the role the committee is taking in running the event. He noted that through other venues that wouldn't affect their budget, there would be more than two performances.
We've scaled it right back, or the thinking of it, to just twice, once in July, once in August, two entertainers each time. I've spoken to the sound person. He's charging the same as last year. He's been very fair. And we're looking for local talent. So we've scaled it back to just what we think is good. And we're working closely with Michelle Hauser for other venues. So there will be music down there more than just twice, but that's what the group has come to.
The committee has partnered with a company called Harmony to look after sponsorship for the event. Norrie noted the company is responsible for lining up the sponsorships while the committee pays the artists. Norrie mentioned the committee's small budget and a study they did last year to monitor attendance.
We just have a small budget with a limited budget for advertising as well. We did a study of how many people came last year. Appreciate those that come, but and the amount of people it takes to set up, and you need some of us there. So we just decided we're going to try it twice this year and then piggyback with what happens with Harmony.
CAO Matthew Grant explained how the committee's budget works.
As part of this effort, they are looking to expend a portion of their budget, as yet undisclosed, towards that effort. They do have $5,000 that has been budgeted through the town's municipal budget process. Should there be a desire for any further support from the town, that would come in the form of a recommendation from the committee to council for approval, such as staff time or other resources.
Councillors Angela Hicks and Dave Pinnell showed their support for live music in the area.
People can come by boat and sit and listen to the music.
I just think that any time that we can promote anything around our river, that natural beauty we have in this town, we have to utilize that much more than what we are, and I think we're on the right way. Come on in by boat, tie up and listen to it, and it's just great. So anytime that I can help promote that, I'm all for it.
Councillor Mike Shank was hopeful the event would be able to expand again in the future, noting public input.
I fully support what Bob and the Arts Committee, our advisory committee, is doing. I live so close, right on the water along Highway 33 in Loyalist. They have a bath every weekend. They have, and it's very well attended there. So if it's very well attended here and it's a takeoff here, we can increase those dates. You know what I mean? Because I've had some phone calls where it's saying, Jums, you know, well, why is there only two? Why can't there be five? Well, the committee is the one. I'm not part of that committee. I let the committee go through its process and go from there.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News.
This has been North Shore News and Interviews. If you have an idea for a story or want to create stories for this show, consider joining our 100% volunteer team. Contact Amherst Island Radio for more details.